From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, which is really the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around this culture of love, this idea that if you help somebody, it makes them want to help somebody as well. And it's kind of a give first, pay it forward philosophy. It's beginning to take hold. So that's why I started the show originally, is just to kind of promote entrepreneurship. But then this turned into really a venture capital company and investing into my hometown. And then that's how the Backyard Advantage really started coming together. And we had a party in my backyard over the summer. I think it was in September. It was the second of our backyard parties. And to join us on the show today are two people that were in the backyard at this event, because they helped design the place. I've got a new backyard and new buildings associated with where our family lives, called Haneyville. And so I have sort of the design people behind Haneyville on my show today. I have Paul and Rachel Hills. They are very, very prominent home builders, home designers in the greater Placer County area and beyond, but kind of the high-end area of the business. So we're going to talk about home building and home design and the state of that industry. And if there's a chance, we'll talk about Haneyville as well. So Rachel, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So maybe I didn't really do much in terms of describing your background. So maybe Rachel, if you don't mind, maybe just give us a little bit of your background. And then Paul, you as well. And then we need to know more about, like, what is this business and what are the different parts of the business you guys have built?
Okay, sure. So I started many years ago, probably 25 years ago, actually started in the paint industry. And I was able to design communities, how the community was going to look, paint color, shutters, all the exterior finishes. And so that led me little by little into where I am now. When I met Paul 20 years ago, it was just kind of a natural fit for us.
Mm-hmm. So Paul, you've been building homes and designing homes for a number of years. Maybe give us your background.
Yeah. Well, I think to set the stage, I was just not a great student. I mean, not that I wasn't intelligent, but I just wasn't interested in school. And so my dad hired me and three of my friends our senior year. And as a result of that, three of us stayed in construction, one didn't, but it was just something that you start with this pile of wood and look what I did at the end of the day. It was very gratifying. And so that was the beginning. And I just knew, okay, this is what I want to do with my life. So I was 18 when I started.
What part of the construction business were you focused on when you first started? Were you a carpenter?
Just general construction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what your dad's business was, just general construction?
No, he was an electrical engineer.
Oh.
But he was one of those guys that he could read a book and he knew how to do it. And so we went through his house. He lives in Saratoga. And he said, hey, I'm going to hire you and your friends to remodel my house and add on and do all this stuff. And we had no idea. And so on Saturday, he would tell us, okay, this week, here's what you're going to do. And then that week in the summertime, we would go and make a list and say, okay, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to lay this block wall. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And I just loved it. I just loved the satisfaction of working with my hands. And it just took off from there.
Okay. So tell us about Hills Construction, what it is today. And I know you have the organization broke up into different areas. Rachel focuses on a different part of the organization than you, Paul. So maybe what do you do within the business?
So Hills Group is the parent company.
Okay.
And the reason why we separated the companies is because while Paul does the primary design for almost all of our homes, all of our structures, as you saw, we were not the builder, but that allows us to design homes that we don't build homes we didn't design. I can do the interior design for other architects, other builders, clients outside of our business. It became very complicated when everything was under Hills Construction, so we had to separate it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting to think about that and how companies can get formed and, you know, as you discover that stuff. Well, okay, so I'm going to set the stage for my understanding of each of your roles within the business. And so kind of help me along, and then we can kind of dive deeper. So when we first went to start Haneyville, I had this crazy idea that, hell, let's build something that looks like a town. Paul, you designed a really cool vintage gas station that we never ended up doing because it was blocking the view of my son. But the Haneyville itself looks like a town. There's storefronts with signage, et cetera. And you help sort of bring my creative ideas, well, or maybe not so creative ideas. You made them, you brought them to life with your design. And then also you designed our house along with one of your teammates. And so you basically did a house, which is more normal, I guess.
Yeah.
And then you had to design a town. So your role within the business is designing the buildings themselves and then also building stuff. You didn't build ours physically,
right?
But I know you do that. You've done a lot of cool stuff.
I started as a contractor in like 92.
Okay.
And so my first house was a Meeks Lumber kit house. And I think that was in 91 or 92. It's because Meeks Lumber sells the plans, every nail you need, everything that you need. And my friend Mike, who's still with me now, and his brother Glenn, who's gone and done something else, bought this and said, let's build this ourselves. And so we poured the foundation, we made the cabinets, we did everything. And so at that time, you couldn't go on the internet to learn how to do it. So I was going to Home Depot and buying books and saying, okay, how do I do the plumbing? How do I do this? And so that it was just the first house we did, it was just learned by trial and error. Mm-hmm. And it was out at Oliverhurst. And so the lot was, I think, $15,000. And we felt like, okay, we can't screw this up too bad. And so we just thought, okay, let's try here. And we did that house and then went, wow, we really like that. And so then we bought four other lots in the same area. And I sat with an architect.
Oh, you build like spec homes back then.
Oh, yeah. 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 Along, they were like 1,200 feet, 1,300 feet, mm-hmm. something like that. And so the next one, I sat in an architect's office and I drew on graph paper. And I said, okay, here's what I want it to look like. And then he put the plans together and then I'd go and build it. And so we did that year after year after year. And then, I don't know, in the early 90s at some point, I bought a CAD program. And so then I started drawing the houses and I just went, I love this. And so it was just something I fell into and I just absolutely had a passion for it.
Yeah, very interesting. So now is your passion more like it? I have to imagine that the design and all of that is fun to do, but then building it, seeing it come out of the ground mm-hmm. and the different ideas that come up while you're building it, what part do you enjoy more?
I'd say I love the design part because it's that, especially like the houses, like your property. That was really challenging because, like I had said to you, you know, Disneyland, the street scenes in Disneyland, where on Main Street, it's this type of architecture connected to this type. And it was a real challenge to do that. And I love houses like that, where it's just, it's not easy to do. And so I absolutely love the design part still. But I enjoy the construction because, like when we were designing your house, going out there and seeing it come out of the ground, because we came up with a concept as a group, is so satisfying. And then you see it when it's done and like going to events and things like that. I just look back and I'm all, gosh, this was a piece of dirt at one time. Mm-hmm. And look what we came up with. This is amazing.
Yeah. Okay. So Rachel, my understanding of your role is to do a lot of the fine tuned design. So the overarching design is there, but then when you get into the nitty gritty, like the paint color choices, even maybe the interior finish, what that's going to look like, exterior finishes, what are those going to look like? You helped us decide all of those things. Is that a good description of kind of your
role? Yeah, I think partially. The bigger role is our team tries to get into in architecture because we do all the interior architecture. And it's important that we are able to design things before it goes to engineering. Mm-hmm. So that's when a lot of costs and unforeseen costs can come up on the job, is when a designer comes in too late, things are already decided, and sometimes mindsets are already set. And so we gives us an opportunity to really get creative with the architectural team. So our team, For instance, we help do some of the interior architecture of your project and exterior architecture, which you probably didn't even realize because we were doing it with the architectural team.
Okay, that's interesting. No, I guess I didn't have a full understanding of that, but if I remember correctly, I mean, you and I and Stacy, we went and picked out fireplaces mm-hmm. and looked at different yes. designs. We came in and out. We didn't really, Paul, during the initial design, we were meeting with Paul a lot. And then at some point, it was like you were there throughout the entire building process, helping us decide what windows we were going to do. Yeah. And roof and all that. It seems to me, it's an interesting thing because it seems to me that you're having to deal with personalities. Like you were dealing with me and Stacy, and your team was dealing with us in deciding colors and, you know, all these, I guess, subjective type decisions. They may be financial decisions at some level. Do we go with the more expensive, you know,
yes.
lighting?
The answer is always yes.
Yeah. So tell me about that part of the job. Give me any war stories on that. You don't have to mention any names.
No, no.
Or you can mention me and Stacy. I don't care. Say whatever.
You know, you mentioned something, and I think it's a fair point, is that we are with you the longest. Mm. So we're with you before construction, we're with you through construction, and we're with you after, because furniture and various things that come up after. So we really get to spend the most time and get to know the clients the most. And we also get to see that dynamic of you and Stacy worked very well together, but you did have different ideas, but you were very good at, you know, not picking your battles.
So give me, let me clarify that. So compared to the average, let's say husband and wife that roll through, were we less challenging for you than most or more challenging?
No, I think you were, and I'm not just saying that because I'm sitting in front of you. You guys were very easy to work with because you have a good dynamic with each other.
Okay, yeah.
There are, I would say it's probably 50-50. Sometimes we get clients who are even easier. Oh, do you want that? No, it's fine. Whatever you want. But sometimes we get clients who you have a battle in the design room, and you just have to sit back as a designer. It's not our job to solve your fight, but just to be quiet and let it resolve itself.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see how those dynamics shape out. It's like you can take that same thing and it's how do they get through, you know, managing the family budget? How do you get through life without bickering at each other over how do we raise the kids and all that kind of stuff? So it's kind of an interesting, I guess, snapshot on somebody's relationships. Because I have buddies right now that are in the process of building houses. And when we talk about it, it's not a fun process. He's not enjoying it. I'm thinking of one who's building a really high-end place in Napa, and his wife has opinions on, you know, the way it should go. He's made all the money that's going into the house, and he wants nice stuff, but like he doesn't get caught up in
name brands.
And things like that. So it's not fun for him. And her, I think.
He should have come to us.
I know.
we make it fun.
I know. Gosh, I think he regrets it. Because when I go in, we talk. He's actually somebody I spend a lot of time with on a regular basis. And when we talk about this stuff, I'm always saying, I had a blast. I had a great time. It's one of the most enjoyable things I've done. And he's like, we're the opposite, Mark. So it's interesting. Okay, so how do you deal with the more challenging scenarios too? Like, how does that work? Because I think at the beginning, when you were still sort of getting to know us, I was maybe more, I think I gave you the impression, and maybe it's true, that I was like, hey, I just want to make sure I'm not, there. We don't really have a budget, so I want to like be careful the whole way that we don't spend money on stuff that's not practical. Mm-hmm. So I had a little bit of that tone, I know, running through my personality. Kind of wanted to get that straight at the beginning. I might have overstated that, but So I think, I'm not sure we got off on the bad foot, but I think there was a little bit of reservation on your part that maybe this guy's going to be real hard to deal with. I remember sensing that. Like,
you don't come across like that at all.
Okay. I was worried about that just based upon some of our first meetings.
I don't care how many millions or billions you have, and we've had all kinds of clients of different price points, but everybody has a budget. So when somebody says to me they don't have a budget, that just tells me you don't know.
You're not organized.
No, it means it's like you don't know comfortably where you want to be. And sometimes people are afraid to share what their budget is because they think I'm going to spend all your money.
So I think that might have been in my mind.
So what I try to do is I can gauge from our first presentation this or this. Mm-hmm. And if people are consistently drawn to this and I'm very open, so this price point, this price point, this price point, you get a feel. So I'm if something was over throughout our process, I'll just use you as an example. If something was over what I thought you'd be comfortable with, I always had a backup and a why this was good, but this is also good. Ultimately, I want you to no regrets, right? We want our clients to have no regrets. And sometimes choosing the least expensive off the bat is a regret down the road because over the long term, you're going to be in that house forever. You know, your family's there. It's a compound. So for you especially, it's like, look, don't skimp on quality because this is going to be here for a long time. You're not looking to flip this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, one of our clients said something, you know, like when we first start with somebody, I never ask them, like, what do you do for a job or something? Because I don't want them to feel like I'm sizing them up on how much they can spend. And, you know, like she was saying, we've had some really wealthy clients. And one of them said to me one time, he goes, Paul, people with money watch their money. That's why we have money. And it's really true because I've never had a client that just came in and said, open checkbook, let's go. They all are very cost conscious, but they want what they want. And so, you know, for us at the beginning, it's really about setting kind of a parameter or an understanding that we're a team. And I tell everybody, at the end of the day, we want you to be happier than you can imagine because then you'll tell your friends and we'll get more jobs. Mm-hmm. And so I try to train them to not think of us as adversaries, but we're a team trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
I loved how both of you made us think long-term. We're thinking long-term. We're like, I'll probably, you know, I've gone around my house, you know, knowing that I'll live there for the rest of my life going, I'll probably die in my house. Is it going to be like on the back porch or the front porch? I've already like kind of, you know, if I go with something crazy sudden happens, you know, I'll probably fade out one of my favorite spots on the property, right? So it's funny how, or interesting how people view their home and, you know, what it means to them. And I think for me, a lot of the hesitation at the beginning was I had built a house in the past and I kind of did it really scrappy and just, you know, we built a pretty big house and we did it as cheap as we could to build a big house. And this time it was like, let's build with more, more thought. And so, but I didn't know how much money each part of the house would cost, right? So is it a 300 square foot per, you know, $300 a foot house? Is it 400? Where should we put the money? Should it go more into the, you know, kitchen, the bath, the appliances? For us, somewhat into the signage on the outside of the town. So yeah, it's like, how do you decide where to go? Well, is there kind of like rules of thumb of where you steer people to, I guess, invest the most in the home?
I think that's probably a question for Paul. From my perspective, when it comes to me, usually the budget is set or we'll meet ahead of time before Paul puts a budget. We did not build your house, but when we're building a house for somebody, we set a budget. Like, this is reasonable for this home, this type of home that you want. So let's say Tahoe is going to be a different price point. But I'll let you talk to that. About how we do that.
Tahoe costs a lot more to build a home up there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's really kind of managing people's expectations because like if you came to me like at the beginning, I'm going to want to get a read on where do you want to end up? Because we'll have a conversation about how much is it a foot? And I'll kind of ask you some questions. What are you looking for? And then I'll give you a range. And so when I'm designing, I know, and it's just a unique experience because there's not a lot of, you know, architectural design firms that have construction experience. And so there's a lot of architects that we've bid the plans, and I feel sorry for the people because they come in and they're like, yeah, the architect said it was going to cost this much. And I don't laugh, but I'm thinking, there's not a chance you're going to build it for that. And so they've spent all this time and money designing it only to sell the lot because they can't get what they want for the price. And so for me, because we're hoping to see them all the way through, I mean, the way the companies are set up, you can design with us. And the goal is that you want to build with us because you're so happy with the design. But it's a choice. And so we want people to go to the next phase with us as like, wow, we're so happy with the first phase. We want to go to the next phase. We want to work with the interior design team. And so, you know, that's why we set it up the way that we did.
Yeah. And just for our audience, I would have had you build our house, but we already had a previous commitment because of my daughter's house and some other things. So it's like, well, I'm already down this path. Yeah. So, but I wanted to design really nice. And mm-hmm. I had heard of you. I think I had met you a time or two. So we looked you up and, you know, you did.
And we love your builder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we love your builder. Yeah, it was all good experience.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
And that happens. So we have, sometimes we work with builders who will come and want Paul to do the design of the home. And, you know, then we're now teammates. Mm-hmm. So just like we were teammates with your builder.
We've got one up in Nevada right now. It's a big 14,000 square foot house. And we don't build up there, but we designed it.
Build in Nevada.
We build Nevada, just not in the Reno side.
Okay.
And so they came to us for a design. So we designed the house and Rachel did all the interior and everything. But for me, because I'm so passionate and I'm connected to that house, I go up there. I want to see how it's coming out. I want to make sure that they're going the right way. The builder's not taking shortcuts or anything like that. And so we'll take a Saturday and let's just go see what's happening. Let's go up there and look at it. But I'm so blessed because I love my job. I've been doing it for 30 something years, 40 years now, which makes me feel older, but mm-hmm. I love it every day.
Well, you were both of you, but I would say Rachel was more lead on it. So you designed the house and then Rachel helped us through all the finishing and stuff. But throughout the process of building the house, she was out there and she noticed things. So you have sort of this eye for how to build houses as well. Mm-hmm. And so you would notice things and occasionally she would have you come over. Luckily, it's convenient. You have to go all the way to Reno to go, what's she talking about? You know, and you would kind of help advise on things that maybe, you know, I didn't know about in the design. Our builder hadn't been communicated quite with him, and little changes and tweaks that needed to be made. So mm-hmm. it's really handy to have that.
Yeah. And you have to go into building a house believing that, you know, like I have this expression that I use, there's cooks and there's chefs as builders. A cook as a builder is going to take a set of plans and they're going to give you exactly what's on that recipe. Mm-hmm. You get this. If you want a really good meal, you have to be a chef. The tomatoes aren't sweet enough. I need to reduce this. And so we really focus on being chefs. And so when somebody comes to us, we'll design it. And then I have superintendents that will actually do the hands-on building. And so they're focused on the quality control, making sure we're on budget, things like that. My focus is, are we achieving the dream that we set out to get? And so people have to be willing to go through that process to get the best house. You can't just say, here's my plans, build it exactly like it shows, and it's going to be amazing. That's not typically the way it works.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say to his point, even then, because our house, which is right next to yours, mm-hmm. you're our neighbor now, our house, things don't always go as planned. People misread things, and I just did a post about this. It's sometimes I'm going to fight for that, and especially if it's important to a client, but sometimes it's an opportunity to rethink the design. And we did that with your house. There were things that got missed or things that were missed. Something in the communication got a little lost, but it's okay because we shifted. Mm-hmm. And that's what a good design team can do. It's things are going to go wrong on the job. When they go wrong, can you shift? Can you come up with a solution for this now problem, mm-hmm. right? Because they're just our problems. Nothing's perfect. Yeah. But the expectation that it's going to be perfect is where the danger is.
Yeah, I remember running into a number of those type situations in our place. But in the town specifically, we wanted it to feel a little bit industrial. And so we did our HVAC system, the ventilation, the vents and all that. We wanted them to look more industrial. And so they're sort of exposed ducts in certain parts of it. And to get them to actually function correctly in a space like that was a little bit of a challenge. We had to go in and how are we going to do this and make it work? And the air conditioner guy is saying this. And, you know, ultimately we configured it so that it had the look that you, that Rachel and I were thinking would be badass. Yet it has a level of functionality that I guess, you know, gets through, gets passes inspection and everything.
Yeah. The builder's job, I mean, a lot of people think anybody can be a builder. And it's being a problem solver. That's primarily what you do. Because if it were a matter of just, like I was saying earlier, following a recipe, anybody could do it. But every day, all we do is solve problems and figure out how to make things better.
Yeah. So I'm kind of wondering, like, where does the creativity come from? If I tell you exactly what I want, obviously you can build it how I say, I guess, but just to take, let's say what the way that I phrase things is I'm not as specific. I'm more, blah, here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? And thinking of the town and the paint colors and stuff like that. You help pick out the paint colors on the town and you used, I thought, a real imaginative way of doing it. You had gone to a hotel in Scottsdale and saw a building specifically. You thought that color green on that particular part of the clubhouse or the town would be ideal. What do you think? And so Stacy and I decided to take a little trip to Scottsdale and look it up. And we actually like the Ambassador Hotel a lot. Yeah. It's a cool spot. They got a great rooftop type bar. Anyway, the color of their the face of the building there at the Ambassador, we said yes, you're right. Yeah. But it, like, we're kind of thinking, like, how does your mind work to come up with, because we could have gone with any color and we would have been really happy.
We do this. Paul and I both do this. So when we're on vacation, we should just be relaxing, and we do a lot of that. But we're also always looking for, hotels are a great spot to find things. We never want to copy somebody else's design, especially a residential design, but we like to get details from hotels because they are able to do things that clients are afraid to do in their own home. So if we can take a picture of this edge detail or this paint color and look how it looks on the outside of this bar, then you can envision it. If I just came to you with that paint color without you seeing it on this very cool bar, then you probably would have said no. So anyway, we look for those opportunities, ceiling details. Hotels can get away with some really great stuff.
Because you're really creating an emotion. And like when I'm starting a house for somebody, I try to get them to focus not on, you know, exactly this is the floor plan they want, but I tell them, what's the emotional feeling you want to have when you're done? And so like when we go to a hotel or something, there's an emotional experience or feeling that you have. You see this bar and you're like, wow, this is great. I love that. And so you try to capture those feelings. And that's what she's saying is like, we'll look at it. We'll go, how can we get this feeling? Not exactly that paint color, but how can we capture this feeling in one of our homes? Mm-hmm. And it's fun because, you know, when we go out to dinner with our kids and stuff, they had to tell us, stop talking about business, because we're like, oh, what are we going to do over there? What are we going to do here? Because we both love what we do.
That's awesome.
And especially if you're in the middle of a project, you know, so you have kind of a really good reason to keep your eyes peeled for, I don't know, maybe a decision that hasn't quite been made yet.
Yeah.
And help them to make that decision.
Yeah, I've been fortunate because, like, you could introduce me to somebody and an hour later, I can't remember their name, even if I try all the techniques. But you show me a house that I saw 5 years ago and I can tell you exactly how it was put together, what made it feel that way. It's just, you know, for me, now I'm asking you, and in my mind, I'm going, oh, okay, I see what they're trying to get to. And I have all these files in my head and I start thinking, oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know, have the entry over here. I'm going to put the bar over here and I'm going to have the corner and wrap it around. And so I'm recreating those and it's just really exciting. Like, I've had clients come and say, hey, I saw this house you did. Can we use that? And I'm like, no. Because that's a one of one. That's their house. Mm. And it's almost harder when I've had people bring me a set of plans to try to look at that. I just scrap it. I don't even look at it. I just start from new. And because my brain just is not geared to say, okay, I'm going to take that and redo it. I want to come up with something new every time.
All right. So give me some examples of some of the coolest stuff you guys have built and designed.
Your
Ours is different. Ours is different. So to just describe ours, you come in through the gate. We now have the two gates. So depending which way you come in, and you come in and you've got three houses, and it's like a family clubhouse that we call the town because the facade of it looks like a town. And we did it that way because the property we bought was the original winery of Placer County, the first one ever. And it kind of looked like a commercial thing, but it was dilapidated and we ended up having to tear it down. So let's rebuild it to make it feel like a commercial building. So I think you guys did a great job of helping bring out that concept. But our house is more plain gym. I mean, it's really not. It's perfect for us. It's a two-bedroom house that is, 4,600 square feet. It's not huge. It's like half the size of the other one. But it's like, it's perfect. It's perfect for two people. And if we have a guest come over, they do it. We got a great gym. So you help design the gym and how that's going to get laid out. I think that's really nice. So we have some really nice aspects of it. But, you guys have designed stuff that is like off the charts unique. Our town isn't unique, but I feel like our house is kind of upper end custom. But I mean, am I underselling it?
No, I think my answer is going to be different than Paul's because for me, it's whatever project I'm working on when somebody has a realistic budget. Whatever project I'm working on now is my favorite now. But I know Paul's done some really creative things, some bunkers, and I don't know if you've been in the bunker house, but
no.
I don't know if that's was that.
But
would
I do
that
want
be what
talk
you would
about
say?
Security no. with you, so that's a good. After we talk about this, or we could talk about the bunker if you want to. But some people are private about their security, but I think it's a really cool topic. I'm in the security business, so
yeah, we did a house and we put a bunker, an actual bunker underneath. And we consulted with a bunker building company. I think they were in Arizona. That's all they do. They go around the world and build bunkers. And one of my clients wanted one. And so we brought them out and did a lot of research. And then we built one in a house. And there's a hidden door that you wouldn't find that takes you down a stairwell. And then there's a Browning vault door. And so then you go through there. And the current owners have like a big family room with a TV, big bar, a place originally was going to be for like poker tables and stuff, a bathroom, and then an indoor shooting range. And it's got its own power, its own water source. I mean, if the house burned down, you could still live.
How many square foot is the bunker?
1,500.
1,500 square foot. Does it have rooms in it? I mean, obviously, I guess the shooting area is its own section.
Yeah, and there's one other big room that you could configure into a couple of bedrooms, but it's got a full bathroom, its own sewer, its own well, so it's a very independent.
And they probably keep it so that they could stock it with a big supply of food and, you know, supplies and stuff like that.
Yeah, they've got a lot of stuff down there.
Wow.
So now, is that built on like a raised foundation, or you can still do it within a slab?
It has to be a slab.
To be a slab.
Yeah, because otherwise somebody could cut through the floor. It's 12 inches of concrete with four layers of rebar all the way around.
And then floor, it vents, ceiling. The airflow comes from, not through the house, though.
No,
it comes from somewhere else.
One of the things that we learned from this bunker company is it's not about, like, you know, you see a lot of bunkers on TV and there's like a pipe that goes up out of the ground and it bends over. It's not about doing that. And so what we did is we ran lateral pipes perpendicular to the house. We dug a big trench and we put riprap, which is big chunk rock, and put the pipe sloping down so nobody could ever pour anything up it. And then we put rock on top of it and we put a house drain. So all it does is it looks like it's just a yard drain, but it's actually two ventilation systems. And so there's air filters on the inside that bring the air in, and you would never know that's where the air comes from.
Wow.
It's about hiding things.
But people that have already built a house, let's say for like us, hypothetically, it's not practical to try to put it underneath our house today, I would assume. So can you just buy a bunker build a bunker somewhere else on your property?
You can, but they're not going to be the same as building one. Mm-hmm. I mean, like on your property, if you said, hey, Paul, I want to build a bunker, I would say, okay, let's put a little tool shed out here.
Okay.
And in the tool shed, you know, there would be a hidden area that had either a staircase or something that went down, and it would be completely self-sufficient. And that's the key, because you don't want to trap yourself in like a concrete box. You want to be able to live there if you had to use the bunker. And so it's about keeping it hidden.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. It's fun to do.
Now everyone's going to be looking for the tool shed.
No. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He's got a lawnmower out there. I'm going to get it.
It's underneath the lawnmower. That's interesting. Because we've thought about that because, I mean, look at what's going on in society today.
Yeah.
And if you think about security, or you know, everybody's thinking more about security today than they did 2 weeks ago because of everything that's going on geopolitically. You can see what's happening, when the Black Lives Matter uproar happened, there was a lot of concern for, you know, safety, even out in, you know, we live in the Loomis area. And all I could think about, especially when you moved in next door, is there are probably more guns per capita in the town of Loomis than maybe any other area of the Sacramento area.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I know you have guns, we have guns, but other people in the all my buddies have guns.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to think. I don't know that that exists like in Roseville necessarily.
Yeah. It's a pretty safe area we live in.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's interesting. So from that standpoint, you built some cool. So you guys built, you bought the house next to us and then you've kind of rebuilt it and you're building new parts of the house. What's going on over there at your place?
We're really, you know, there's city requirements that we have to stay within. And so we basically just tore down the front of the house and completely rebuilt it, put the new outside. Mm. There's certain restrictions. We're doing other remodels and additions because we don't typically do remodels as much as we'll add on 5,000 square feet to your house. We'll do, you know, we're really geared to do bigger projects like that. And that's really going to be, you know, the future in our area because there's not a lot of new lots for sale. Okay. And so I have a feeling like we're doing a couple of big projects right now that are both 5,000 square feet. One guy's got a huge gym and a indoor pickleball court. Another one's just expanding his family. But, you know, I think that's going to be the trend in building in our area.
Indoor pickleball
court. He's got an outdoor one. Now he's got an indoor one.
Wow. This guy must be a great pickleball player.
He is. He's really good. In fact, I was joking with him about, you know, it's not even going to be fun if I play with him. And he goes, no, it wouldn't be.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So tell me about the other cool things you built. Okay. So bunker, that's badass. I love the idea of doing that. You know, I think we thought about doing that kind of thing, but I was already worried about the budget. I guess I'll worry about safety second.
I think we've got a project coming up that is really cool. It's it was an outdoor horse arena and we tore it down and he's building basically a party house and it's 12,000 feet, but it's got a half court indoor basketball court, two bowling lanes, a golf simulator.
It's a barn dominium.
Yeah. And is he building a separate house to live in or he's going to just live in
He's already got a house there.
Oh, okay.
And this just looks, it's glass and it just looks over the valley and everything. And it's going to be amazing. It's just, and that's probably, it's right along the lines of yours. It's just, it's amazing and it's a unique project that you're never going to see anywhere else.
And you're designing it.
Yeah, we're going to design it and build it.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that sounds exciting. And can you tell me what part of town it is? Is it?
I want to meet the guy. It'll come out someday it's going to be so unique. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of press on it. Definitely.
It sounds like it. Wow, amazing. Okay, Rachel, now are you going to have a role on that house or no?
Yes, I do. I'm doing the interior design.
Okay, so besides that one, give it. So you get the bunker, you got the barn dominium. Deluxe. That guy sounds like a fun guy. Or his wife, but whatever. So give me some ideas on stuff you have been involved in designing that you're like, wow, I'm really proud of that, or that's cool.
You brought it up. Our current house that we're doing right now is so different than anything that we really have done. This is the first time that I'm leaning towards traditional. And usually we've done very modern homes for ourselves, or we've done Spanish Mediterranean. So this one, what we loved, you are the one who pointed out this property to me. I don't know if you remember this.
I do.
And you said, we just want to have good neighbors. I'm like, well, would we be good neighbors? Because so I had to beg him to come and see the property because he didn't want to move from where we were.
Beg.
Which was a very, yes, I did beg. it was a very modern house and I loved it. But this was there was something special about this. And I'm not an energy person, but there was a special energy there. And it was a very loved, it was a very loved property mm-hmm. by the family that you yes. know that lived there for 28 years. And they raised their kids there. And it was really hard for her to leave. They were moving out of state. And so we didn't want to change it much. And it, modern just didn't seem to fit with that. And so I thought, you know, I want this to be a house that has the essence of what was there, but is also an updated version, has some updated things. But we kept the floor plan is the same, very similar, kind of reconfigured mm-hmm. some things, but we just took new finishes, new kitchen layout. I've been sending her pictures just to update her, and she appreciates.
So nice.
She's so nice.
Yeah.
So, when we drove across the property the first time, which I had to beg him to do, he said, "Oh my gosh, I love it." And we made an offer that day because we both loved it. We didn't, it needed some updating. It just, mm-hmm. houses do after a while. So it wasn't a fault of the property or the previous owners. It just served their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So to your point about only having two bedrooms, because that is just you, it's just you and Stacy. It was just going to be Paul and me. And so we eliminated one of the bathrooms. And so we just have two bathrooms and a powder, 2.5 bathrooms mm-hmm. in this house. And then we ended up getting our granddaughter mm-hmm. living with us. And so we were able to have the extra bedrooms upstairs. We did some things, but we designed this house for us mm-hmm. to live in forever.
Oh,
not
wow.
not a flip, not
you
a
guys,
temporary.
Yeah, so if I'm speaking out of turn, I'm not 100% sure on this, but you guys have built, you talked about building spec homes at the beginning. You would build a home, if I'm not mistaken, move into it for a while and then sell it and go build another home. So you'd live in like brand new homes.
Well, that's
a lot.
She's saying she had to beg me to come out there. She has been a trooper because every 2 years we've moved.
Mm-hmm.
And so like in her garage were just boxes from the last house that never got unpacked.
Interesting.
And so she goes, "I don't want to do it again. This is the property." And like wow. she was saying, I drove across that little bridge and I'm like, "Oh my gosh." And you know, people say, "How long are you going to be there?" And we forever. And they laugh. They're like, "Oh, you're never going to, I'm going to be there forever." I love being out there.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. Your neighbors aren't bugging you too much.
Well, he's okay. You know,
That's awesome. So yeah, I guess that sounds, did you guys keep, now I was over at their house, the Visser's house a few times visiting, and I remember they had this really cool tree house. Do you guys still have that?
Mm-hmm. That's going to be our phase three.
Oh, okay.
So our yeah. first phase is to finish this house, which we're very close. And then we're going to be doing a pond, sort of the okay. smaller version of mm-hmm. what you have. I love that. It's always been on my bucket list mm-hmm. is to have a pond. And then we'll do our phase three, which will be finishing that, or cleaning up that tree house, yeah. making yeah, yeah. it functional and kid friendly.
That's right.
Which it isn't right now.
Yes. Yeah, so the granddaughter that's living with you now, she's 10?
She's 8. She? We eight? Have two of them living with
oh,
us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't remember yeah. if it was one or two. Okay. Make it practical for them too.
Oh, yeah.
I
mean,
yeah.
our dream, and it honestly, it wasn't like something that I was consciously thinking about a long time ago, but once we saw it, we're like, God, we can create experiences for them for years by having a fishing pond, mm-hmm. having all these different activities that they can come over. We're going to be getting animals and things like that. And it's just become such, like I was saying earlier, creating an experience. And so now every time I come home, I'm just have this feeling of, oh my gosh, I love being out here. I mean, obviously, as you know, when you have property, there's a lot of work and a lot of maintenance. Mm-hmm. But I love doing stuff like that.
And that's what he's here for.
Yeah.
Yes. But just to clarify, we have 5 grandchildren total. So okay. we see all of them on our family night, which is Monday night.
Oh,
so they all come over
that.
On.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. So one of the things I love about the way you designed our house, our last house, like I said, it was like 10,000 square feet. And I had to run across the entire house. I forget my car keys. And the garage was on the other side. Was super far from my bedroom, and like, oh my gosh, it was like we never really got lived there 10 years, but I never got organized about like saving time. I was always traveling, you know, 40 yards across the thing. Now everything that I want is two steps away because we thought it through really well. The hallways are wide. It's, you know, it's only a 2-bedroom house, but it's got, it feels, you know, feels sizable in a way for two people.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the advantages we have is we work on the design together. And so we're trying to create a feeling of and be conscious of the space. In a lot of houses, you'll see long hallways and things. To me, that's just a waste. And it's because somebody didn't think it through enough to figure out, how can I reconfigure these rooms? Mm. We want to create experiences. Like when you're in the house, when you're in your house, it's not separate rooms. The activities are kind of the energy of that activity. Mm-hmm. It's all centrally located. But like you're saying, the bedrooms aren't, you know, 100 yards away. And so we really focus on that. Like, what is this going to feel like when it's done?
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys did a heck of a job with our place. We love it. I don't look forward to dying there, but I'm sure I will. Okay, so what's the state of the industry right now? You're working on some real high-end stuff, so obviously the consumer that has a lot of money, he's still spending it, it sounds like. I know interest rates, you know, they're up, they're elevated over, I guess a lot of people that are building houses like this are probably not even financing these houses for the most part, or not much. Interest rates is not a big factor in whether what kind of house you build.
Yeah, most of them are doing, you know, personal financing. Mm-hmm. I think the, you know, on the construction side, what's going to happen is, like I was saying, people are going to start just remodeling their houses because they don't really want to move because the area is so beautiful. And so, you know, and there's no lots really available. And so I think that's the next phase for us.
Interesting. I think when you're talking about the greater Sacramento area, but a lot of our Nevada clients, the Tahoe projects, are coming from the Bay Area, wanting to get out of California for various reasons, financial, a lot of them, or family. So they're less concerned about the interest rates. They're most of them are cash.
Yeah, they've got a lot of equity in their existing places.
They don't need to sell their home that they're in in order to build over there. They want to decide if they want to, after they build, they want to decide if they want to keep their home in California in case they ever want to come back. So you have more of that over there. Less, there's very few remodel that we're working on in Nevada. They're all new construction.
Yeah, because
and some spec houses too.
Yeah, in that area, there's this one specific community called Clear Creek. They're all new lots.
Wow.
And so nobody's remodeling because everything's new. And so in that area, we set up a whole new division. We'll be building up there for years. We have three projects right now. And, you know, we hope to get more up there, but three's plenty because they're a lot more complicated than the houses down here, just because of snow loads and things like that. But, you know, we'll be up there for 10 years, 15 years. I don't ever plan on retiring. I love what I do. I love the people I work with. And so, you know, I don't have any goals of I'm out in 5 years.
What about the labor market out there? Obviously, you guys have great employees, but I know that there's you subcontract a number of areas of the building of a house. What are you seeing out there in terms of labor? You know, there's obviously been issues over immigration and so on. I didn't know if that had really dipped into the home building industry much in terms of less supply of labor?
No, I think in the Tahoe area, it's different because it's quite a process to get your license. It took me a year to get my contractor's license there. So when Clear Creek first started, the prices were sky high because there were so few qualified contractors for that level of home. Now there's more people, so the prices are coming down. In this area, we've been doing it for so long. We have a pool of contractors that we work with that we know are going to do a good job. But it is hard when you're trying to get a high-end house like drywall finish or whatever it may be. There's not, you know, four people that can do that. There's two that can really do a good job.
Well, some of the best subs on our house, the drywall was, they were great. Sierra West drywalls. Do you guys use those guys a lot?
We have before. Yeah.
They were great. I just thinking some of the Cook Engineering, just kind of mentioned Next Homes was Dragos building it. But there were some, I felt like the contractors that we had lined up for the most part were really, really good. So
yeah,
we kind of got lucky there.
Yeah. Now, and it took us a long time to find the good ones because it's kind of like an orchestra. You can't just bring a new player in and they're going to fit in perfectly. They have to all care about each other. There has to be a certain energy on the job. And so when homeowners in the past would say, I have a new person I'd like to put in. we wrote into our contract, no substitution of contractors, because it just makes our job so much harder. Yeah. But no, we're lucky. We've got great subs that work for us.
That's great. And I got to give a shout out to anybody that helped on our project. Thank you. And especially thinking of my buddy Scott over to my right here. He was a big part of coordinating a lot of my thoughts and passing them along to the subs and to the builders and so on. But my daughter-in-law, Brittany, she helped. She's the landscape design person. And so a lot of the ideas come from me with input from my family. And then she helped, you know, put it onto paper or into the computer system and bring it to life. So, I know we're talking about my house a lot. I want to make sure I give a shout out to everybody that is on the project.
I mean, you really, when you're assembling a team to build a house, and this is, again, one of the advantages for us, you can hire an architectural firm, you can hire a contractor, an interior designer, which is what we did when we first started. You know, we were just the contractor. And then you get a lot of finger pointing when there's a problem. Oh, that's not me, that's the architect, that's this. And so we took over the design and the building. And then when Rachel and I started working together 20 years ago, it just kind of completed the package. And so for us, homeowners, because most of our homeowners own companies or run companies, they don't have time to be going out to the job to make sure everything's going right. And so what we try to do is give them kind of like one place that they can go and have comfort that the design's going to get done, the construction's going to get done, the interior design, and they don't have to chase people around. And so it's been a huge advantage for us.
One of the biggest headaches, you know, is thinking about like what are the biggest challenges, one of the biggest frustrations for me through our process, I was really happy and it was really fun, except for there were some in the infrastructure piece of our build. You know, we had to deal with PG&E, we had to move lot lines with the county, because you guys are in the city of, or the town of Loomis. Mm-hmm. We're, even though we're neighbors, next door neighbors, we're in the county. So we had to get, I mean, luckily I know a couple of supervisors at the county kind of helped me navigate, you know, some of the bureaucracy at Placer County. But they were good. It was just more like, what do I have to do so we could be effective? But some of the delays associated with, you know, we were coming in like post-COVID with a little bit of, you know, excuse making about COVID throughout the process. And I'm thinking, I thought everybody was kind of over that. And people are still using that even 2 years ago. They're still using COVID. Are they still using that as an excuse today?
Not as much. Oh, I mean, God. That hit us really hard because everybody used it as an excuse to raise their prices.
Oh.
Because they thought, oh, labor's more, materials are more. And so prices skyrocketed during that time period.
Interesting.
When we don't have the project in the ground yet and we're still dealing with the city or the county or PG&E, like you said, it's a nightmare. And like we had this one project where we developed 10 lots and it took us, and we followed all the approvals, all the guidelines, all the neighbors came to the board meetings and were like, thumbs up, this is going to be great. And it still took us 3 years to get it done just because of all the hoops we had to go through. And so that is very frustrating. Once you get the foundation and then it's in our control and we can really cruise along on the house. But dealing with all the different agencies is an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I don't, hopefully this doesn't come out to bite me, but PG&E was the one that I would be like, are you kidding me? How could somebody have an organization like this? The rest, I can kind of get that, you know, hey, you got an employee like this or whatever, but oh my God, they were horrible.
They've come out to our jobs and they tell us to do something a certain way and we'll do it. And then a different inspector will come out, and this just happened last year, and a different inspector, why did you do it that way? No, tear it out and do it this way. And we're like, just give us one gut. Tell us what the road is and we'll do it.
Yeah.
But don't change the road once we've done it.
Yeah.
They're the hardest one.
They're the hardest. Well, maybe they'll find a way to improve somehow. I don't know. You always kind of hope that they do, but we'll see. And the rates are pretty high too. So that's kind of,
yeah.
What's your biggest frustration typically on a project, Rachel? Like, what do you run into where you're like, oh, I didn't see this one coming?
Builders. No,
she's so funny.
No, not that something couldn't surprise me, but very little surprises me at this point because I've been doing it for so long. But I think the biggest thing is unmet expectations, when somebody doesn't have a realistic expectation about budget, or they forget. They forget what they agreed to early on. And you don't want to have to play this game of, I'll send you the emails of what you said. You gently remind them of what they said, but they still... It's not that I believe that they're lying. I think we genuinely forget the things that we talk
about. Luckily, you got you and your team are very organized. You keep great track of everything. So even if the builder happens to have forgotten, or maybe me or Stacy or somebody else has forgotten, you guys have all the backup. You know the decision. You kind of got it off the top of your head. So you and your team are spectacular in terms of
that. I would say my team. Amanda. Amanda's super organized.
That's awesome. That,
you know, you hire people to do what you aren't. And and she is definitely organized and she's pretty awesome.
And the furniture design. I really like the furniture that pretty much Stacy picked out, but I had a little bit of input on it, but I really like the way it looks and feels and the functionality and stuff like that. So you guys are
good news. Great at that. That was Molly. Molly led that.
She was fantastic. Yeah, she was. And then it was never high pressure. It was never like, you know, because like she's selling me a piece of furniture or something like that. It didn't feel like that. It felt like,
we all work as a team. So we have different people that lead different phases, but we're all in communication. So we meet once a week and we're talking about every project and we review things together. So that's the best way.
And more you have access. I think it's interesting to think about, like, you can't go into the store and buy some of the stuff that you have access to. So you're going to get a kitchen table. Well, I want a 30-foot table. Oh, okay. Yeah, no problem. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So you guys know where to get a custom 30-foot table or whatever it might be that you can't. If you go to, I don't know, I can't even think of the name of a, you know, I can't even think of the name of a furniture store, but you know, it's something different.
Right.
So,
really you're limited.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we work with artisans. We're creatives, we're artists, and we work with we like working with other artists who can even come up with something better. So maybe we start, so you're with your table, for instance, we followed a certain design, but then you work with an artist, a specialist in their field, and then they can come up and make it even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the things that we've learned over the years is that we have specific talents, and I'm sure a lot of people running their businesses run into the same thing. They're good at this thing, so they think they're going to start a business. And it's not that easy. And so I learned early on, you know, in construction, I thought, oh, I can run a business and build homes. It takes, you know, two totally different skill sets. And so, you know, I learned, okay, I'm going to hire somebody to do the things that I'm not good at, and I'm going to focus on the things that I am good at and get even better. Mm-hmm. But it took a while to get that through my brain that you can't do everything.
Yeah, right. That's something that we can all, a great lesson for any business person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We worked for free for a long time before we decided we really need to understand the business side of what we do, because when you're creative, you just want an opportunity to create, and maybe there's some fear involved. So that clouds your decision-making when you're pricing something out, because you don't want them to say no because you want the job so bad. But now we know that we're running a business, but we also want to be creative. So we've gotten wiser about that.
And you must say no occasionally if it's just not the right fit. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I jokingly tell people, you know, that picking a builder is like picking a spouse. It's a long-term commitment based on trust and communication. The design phase is our dating period, because I may not want to marry you any more than you want to marry me for the build. But people laugh, but it's really true, because it's probably one of the most emotional ups and downs that people are going to go through. And it's a very unfamiliar. Most people haven't built a home, so they don't know what to expect. And so one of our jobs is to kind of, here's what's going to happen next, to take away the anxiety and kind of lead them down the road of, you know, what's going to be happening on the project.
Well, that makes me think about remodel. I've heard about stressful situations when you're remodeling a home and you're still living there.
That could be
hard on a relationship.
That's not a good idea. Like, we typically will not remodel.
But that's what you guys are doing right now, right?
Well, no.
We're
living in the trailer.
Oh, you mean our house or other houses? Yeah.
Well, no, I thought, okay, so you're not living in the place you're...
We bought a trailer and we stuck it over there. But even the projects that we're doing, we tell people, we're not going to remodel your house if you live there, because you're not going to be happy when the air conditioning goes off or something happens, somebody uses your bathroom or whatever it may be. And so the ones that we're doing, we partition it off. Oh. And they're still there, but it's not like they're seeing it all the time. There's dust in their house or anything like that.
Oh, that's good, because I mean, realistically, I had workers out of my property for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And you sort of get used to it, but you don't want them in your house.
Exactly.
Right? If you're working on the town, that's fine, but I wouldn't want you working in my house every day.
It creates more stress. There's already stress involved in building. And I tell everybody up front, this is not a stress-free process, but we've done this for so long. Like Rachel was saying, same for me. There's nothing new. Like there's no new problem that I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I've never seen that before. Very seldom does that happen. And so we know what to prep people for. We know the next phase and what they're going to be feeling. And so we prepare them and say, look, during this phase, it's going to be very exciting because the framing goes really fast. But then after that, it's going to slow down. And so just controlling people's emotional expectations is a huge part of what we do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, too, I was going to ask you, Rachel, about buying things in advance and putting them in storage. Are mattresses, you're not supposed to put them in storage for extended periods of time?
Gosh.
I ran into you at Bennett's the other night. You're like, we had a little problem with our mattress.
Yeah. So apparently there's a way to store mattresses, which is just as expensive as buying a new mattress. So it just is silly. So yes, we had our mattress in storage wrapped in industrial. So
a couple of mice found their way
in. They made it their home.
Yeah.
So we got a new mattress and it just got delivered today.
Oh,
so,
nice.
But anyway, yeah, no, we shouldn't do that. Any upholstered pieces.
Oh, be careful about storing.
Or make sure that you put a lot of traps out.
Okay, so what did I not ask you? That's my last question. What did I not ask you? Anything that we should make sure our audience thinks about, whether it's about having a construction company or a design company or about building a house, anything?
I think when somebody's building a house, like when I first interview with people, I explain to them, talk to two or three different people. And I hope they come back, but I want them to come back going, okay, you're the right guy. And just like my example about dating, you know, the dating period, I want them to go, okay, I've seen what else is out there and I see the value of what you guys provide. And so we have a very high capture rate, you know, but I tell everybody, go and talk to other people. I think that's really important. You know, it's not the same as it was 25, 30 years ago, where a homeowner could go to three contractors and say, okay, I want to get three different bids, because they're going to be completely different. They shouldn't be, but contractors a lot of times make it very complicated. And it's not like we can go and find five different drywall companies to give you a price. There's only two. And so, you know, it's not like you can go out and find multiple people. Find somebody that you have a good relationship, a good rapport with, and go down that road with them, whether it's the architecture firm or the construction. Find somebody that you connect with and start going that way.
I'm going to give one before I'm going to have Rachel answer this question, but I've just thought of two more people I should give the shout out to. The people over at Interior Wood Design,
yes.
Phenomenal people. Cabinets can have a big impact on the way your house looks and the functionality. And then also the Closet Doctor, my good buddy over there, Derek, he did our cabinets in our garage. So those are, you know, very important.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. My advice would be, don't spend all your budget. You didn't do this. Don't spend all of your budget on your house and make sure you leave room for furniture and accessories and especially art, because art plays such a big role in the way a house feels at the end of the day. Too many times people are taking their old furniture, trying to make it fit in this new spot, and it just doesn't feel like a new home. So make sure that you plan ahead and reverse it.
Have a good budget.
Yes.
Plan
ahead for your furniture and accessories, and then back it out with your construction.
And also being realistic when you're setting the budget, because we have people that come to us and they're saying, okay, I'll cut the budget. I'll use a Gen Air stove or something like that because I want to get to a certain budget. The reality is you're building your dream home. When it comes time to pull the trigger for whatever it is, the stove, the range, whatever, you're going to pick the expensive one. So be realistic at the beginning, because once that budget's set, that's your expectation. And all of a sudden you have a $20,000 change order for appliances because you've completely changed it. It does not make it an enjoyable experience for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great stuff. Well, thank you for joining me on the show. Thank you for doing everything you did for our house and our property and the place I'm going to die. Hey, it's great to have neighbors. I love our last neighbors, the visitors. They're fantastic, but it's great to have you guys there. We need to see each other more often. So
yeah,
invite me over. When is your place like wrapped and done? It's got to be close.
We'll talk about that after this.
She's going to blame the contractor.
Yeah, the contractor. Well, thanks again for coming.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
You bet. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.